Somebody said a long time ago that one of the most powerful sermons there is only two words, me too. And that really resonated with some of us over the years. And so for a few weeks, we want to talk about this idea of me too. But it's doing a couple things at once. One, it's kind of this is what's going on behind the scenes, as it were, for Crosspoint. This is really how we think about and talk about and what informs a lot of how we speak on Sunday mornings. This is running in the background for us at Crosspoint. So it's kind of one of those, this is a vision series a little bit. But at the same time, and maybe more significantly, we believe this is how each of us as individuals, this is how we're being invited to behave, to orient ourselves and relate to others along a lot different lines than maybe we've ever heard before. And so then the idea then ultimately a church would be the sum total of a bunch of individuals orienting themselves correctly with others all together in this really healthy, transformative kind of way. So that's the hope for the series. In sixth grade, I decided that it would be a great way to harmonize a couple of different values that I had. One value being I really wanted just to have some people, some friends. I didn't do real well in that category until way later in life. And so, hey, here's a way that maybe I can get some people together to start a club. And it would harmonize with the fact that I just love nature. And so I put the two ideas together. And what it was going to be was a club that went out and fought for the welfare of animals. In fact, the name of the club was Animals. It was an acronym, American Nature Individualists Making Animals Live Safer. So as a sixth grader, I wasn't even sure what I was trying to get across in that name. I was just really proud of the acronym. And I started pitching it. And so there was five, six, maybe seven guys that decided they were going to sign on, much to my surprise, that I had officially just started my own organization. And so we all took animal names. And here was the idea. We were going to go out. We lived in kind of this rural area with a big lake and a river that kind of ran through the middle of it. And we were going to go around on our bicycles as sixth graders and look for incidents of animals being abused or mistreated. Some this coming, we all hunted, so we just decided to live with that paradox. We were going to go help animals that needed our help. So what we would do is we would come together, and when we saw some ne'er-do-well mistreating an animal, we would yell frenzy, and then we would go at them and apprehend them and beat the tar out of them, and then celebrate that evening over Kool-Aid. So one day we're riding our bikes together, and we look down, and behind my house was where this river that came right out of the spillway, out of the lake, so I could see the lake from my kitchen window. And we look down, and we see this guy with a crossbow, and sometimes the river, it would overflow and wash a bunch of fish into the river, and then as it would go down, big carp would get stuck in the shallows. And we could see this guy with a crossbow shooting these helpless, huge carp stuck in the shallows. And we knew right away who it was. This was Rod. Rod always, it was his weapon of choice. Rod carried he was like a little hairless Chewbacca everywhere he went, and he shot everything that would hold still long enough. And so we're looking out across the field, down the woods, and in standing in the river shallows, shooting carp after carp after carp. So we got together, our hearts beating, and we said, are we in? Are we in? Yes. Frenzy! And we take off on our bikes across down the road, across the fields, bumping and popping all over the place, and then down through the woods. And we're running at this guy, and our plan is when we get to him, we're going to beat him up. We didn't really think about two things. One, by the time we get there, 75% of our energy has been expended getting there. And Rod is the only one of us that has a weapon. So we show up as, I think what we didn't really have a plan. I think what we thought would happen is he would see a bunch of squeaking sixth graders and just throw down his weapon and take off running. But he just kind of looked up and kept shooting carp. So we get all the way up to him, kickstands down, because that's what rebels do. And we walk up to him and say, this is what we decided. Hey, Rod. And then for the next 30, 45 minutes, just had a discussion while he killed more fish. And slowly that moment began to taper for him, and so it tapered for us. Nobody brought up the animal horror that was going on. We got back on our bikes. We never talked about that our sole purpose for existing had been completely failed that afternoon, and we just never brought it up again. Well, not long after that, on the playground in sixth grade, there was some kind of disagreement. I don't remember what it was about. I just remember the argument back and forth. They all got together and they decided to kick me out. I was no longer one of the animals. And the injustice of it, and I shook my little fist, and I tried to come up with some... I remember arguing about it and saying that you can't do that. I started animals, and they got together democratically and kicked me out of my own organization. This is one of two ways that I'm exactly like Steve Jobs. I think his name's Steve. Oh, okay, that's the other way, yeah. Many of you experienced in your own way very much the exact same thing. You don't remember why, but there came a moment where either you did the excommunicating or you were excommunicated. That you were kicked out, that you weren't part of a clique or a pack. See, it doesn't even take till sixth grade for Lord of the Flies to really kick in. I mean, really about second grade, a pig's head on a spear happens. And the meritocracy kicks in pretty early in life. It's late by sixth grade if that's the first time it's happened. Because we learn at a very young age how to live that way with each other to survive. I want to talk about something that I absolutely love today. Paul was talking about it with a very young church in Corinth, brand new believers. These people were crazy. They did all kinds of crazy. They come from so many different backgrounds. And Paul is trying to help them understand part of your background will sync up pretty well. Part of it you're going to have to ditch. But he's trying to help them understand who they are. And he asks them a series of rhetorical questions. And one of them, I love this. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 16, he says this. Don't you, and the you is plural. He's talking to a small young church. Don't you guys know that you yourselves, not the building you made, they didn't have church buildings back then. They just met wherever. Don't you know that you yourselves are God's temple? The word can be translated sanctuary. Don't you realize that you people harbor God's spirit and that God's spirit dwells in your midst? Guys, don't you understand how different you are than you used to be? Don't you understand how fundamentally different you are than other people? Don't you get it? Similarly, he's talking to a young church in Rome, and you can find in the book of Romans chapter 8, he's making a case with regard to how we interact with God's Spirit now. And he says this, chapter 8, verse 11 of Romans, if the Spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, plural, you, and he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of his Spirit who lives in you. Let me condense that for you. The Spirit that took Jesus' dead body and brought it back to life, that same Spirit resides within you. Don't you guys know that you are a temple, a sanctuary, that you house the very Spirit of life himself? Don't you understand that you have at your disposal the source of all things? Don't you understand how different you are? See, today I want to talk about church, and I love this topic, and I have conversations about this a lot, but here's what I just have to say up front. Some of you, you're going to love this. Some of you, you're going to think you love it, and Thursday you're going to go, wait a minute, I disagree. Because what I'm hoping to do is suggest something that's completely backward from how you learned about Jesus, church, religion, faith, growing, love. I actually hope to do that today. Because what Paul is saying here isn't new. And what you'll find this morning is what I'm saying is not new. You'll know it to be true down inside. It's whether or not you're able to accept it. Because what has always been said by the very Spirit of God is, don't you know you're different? Don't you know how different you are? Not just because you don't get to sleep in on Sundays, but do you know how different you are? You don't really think it would take inspiration, inspiriting. You don't really think it would take inspiration to come up with just another club. Ooh, but yours has a cross on the clubhouse. You don't think that's why Jesus died, do you? You don't really think Jesus came to start a divinely sanctioned meritocracy, do you? You don't think that the power of God's Spirit that resurrected and resuscitated the dead body of Messiah, and that the same promise is available to us, you don't really think that that Spirit is necessary to start another club, do you? Don't you know you're the temple of life himself? You know how different you are? Do you know how powerful in all the right and healthy ways that makes you? I want to talk about three words this morning. And somebody else came up with using these three words years ago. So the three words aren't original with me. But what we're going to do is we're going to put our own spin on it a little bit this morning, because I think it's going to help us. And they're simply this. They're beliefs, behaviors, and belonging. I'm going to dance around with these three words, okay? Most of us believe at one point in our life, maybe many of you believe this now, that at the root of what we are in this faith, in this religion, at the root, it's all about beliefs. Now, many of us, there's evidence of that understanding, that it all rests on beliefs, because when it comes to talking about to somebody else who has a different belief system, you start there. First things first, let's deal with what you believe and what I believe, because they're at odds, and I think I'm right. Obviously, that's why I believe them. We start with belief. We think it's our duty to start with belief. We think, many of us, or have learned, whether we're in the church or we've learned it, and that's why we stay away from the church, that at the root of what we are, it's a belief system. And so when I talk about a belief, I'm talking about doctrine. I'm talking about creeds and our confessions. I'm talking about the way that we decide what denomination you and I are together or apart. We're talking about our worldviews. We're talking about our politics and our minds, our sometimes very complex system and systematic thought and theology and philosophy, our look at history. The way that we organize information and what information we uphold and ascend to, those are our beliefs. And many of us believe that we're supposed to start there. Now, many of us, because we start there, or thought we were supposed to, you start with beliefs. The next thing then are, what are the associated behaviors with those who believe this? What are the behaviors of one that believes what I just said that we believed, whatever it is? And so your behaviors, those are your do's and don'ts. Hey, if you're going to be somebody who believes this, here's what you need to stop doing. It's one of the first things many of us came into contact with. We came to Jesus, and the first thing we did was say, I believe this, and I better quit doing this. And so there's a whole list of don'ts, but there's a list of do's. There are things that I've never done that I'm going to begin doing. Ritual, ceremony, customs, celebrations, study, meditation, reading, attendance, where you attend. So there's a whole list of do's and a whole list of don'ts. Depending on your background, one or the other was a longer list, but there's associated behaviors that work in concert with the belief system that we have embraced. Here's what we have in our heads. Here's how you can expect then us to behave based on what is in our heads. The progression of these three things then is kind of a reward. Therefore, because of these beliefs and these practices, you get belonging, inclusion, usness, community. You weren't one of us, but because you confessed and said that you believe this, and you're willing to cut out and include X, Y, Z, A, B, C, you now are one of us. We're talking about membership. Now you're one of us. Prove it. I can test you, and I can watch all the things that you don't do now. This is how it works. Now, there are different levels of belonging, because obviously some of us have more information than others. So if I have more right information and I do less wrong than you, I obviously have a deeper, philosophically speaking, I am more deeply embedded in the belonging structure. And so the hierarchy is created. A worth system is created. This, for at least generally speaking, for many of us, has been a very sophisticated and in times very enjoyable and very effective meritocracy. This is a system where your inclusion, your belonging, you have to pay for. You have to earn. You have to earn the merit to be able to belong. Do I believe right? Do I behave right? If it's yes and yes, then I get to relate to you rightly. My belonging is based on the first two. It's a reward for the first two. Let me tell you what this does is it creates a deep sense of anxiety. We'll call it peace, and we'll even think that we're enjoying it, but running in the background, and sometimes our kids have to tell us this for us to believe that it's true, is this deep anxiety that if I don't get the first two right, I'm not going to belong. So you're constantly asking, do I believe the right things? Do I believe, I don't believe the right things. But I can't say anything because what I really want is to belong. If I could be honest, these two things don't matter to me much at all in comparison to belonging. Constant anxiety. And not just, am I going to get caught doing something wrong? Understand, you can be excommunicated, and some of us have experienced this firsthand. You can be excommunicated for sincerely coming to a different conclusion. I've done my studies and I've thought and I've meditated and based on experiences, my own life, my own experience, and my family and my whole origin story, where I'm from geographically, whatever it is, I've come to this conclusion. And somebody goes, wrong, you're not one of us. And so you got to stuff that if you want to belong. This is the birthplace of divisions and nitpicking, because it's about precision. You've got to get things right. So somebody just makes a passing comment at a funeral or online, and comments start flying in the comment section or face to face or behind your back or whatever it is. No. The Bible says this. No. This is wrong. That whole idea is toxic. It's bad and it's divisive. It's nitpicking. No, it's not safe just to make a comment and to express yourself. You will be corrected. Why? Because precision is requisite if you're going to get to belong, which is what we all want. I'm defending us. I have to do that. This makes some people more valuable than others. It makes it a competition. Geez, the more information that I have, the more spiritual I am, the more secure my belonging becomes. Geez, I mean, as a pastor, you're way behind me. I'm almost running this thing. I'm so right. If you're new, that's sarcasm. See, we all want inclusion. And here's the thing that I think might be most significant. At least it is to me. This system is the birthplace for hypocrisy and lying. Because what we all want is belonging. And so I will tell you I believe, I'll confess things, I'll defend, I'll shout things into a megaphone in public. I will say I believe and behave in such a way that's completely out of alignment with what's really going on. And you know, God knows the whole time. So we really, to really close that gap inside of us, we have to convince ourselves that we believe it. We have to convince ourselves that our behavior, I like doing this. That's how important belonging is. It makes us hypocrites, where we say and do this thing, but what we actually are is this thing. We will do things with certain groups of people as long as we know no one will find out. It makes us lie. It makes us cover. It makes us hypocrites because we don't want to lose what we all want, inclusion, belonging. This was laying on the floor after first service. It's an anonymous note. I hate my life. I don't feel safe or accepted at church. I can't keep this fake life up. I want it to end. I'm not asking you to identify yourself if you happen to stay for another hour, but I hope that you talk to somebody, come talk to me. But in a way, we celebrate part of what you're saying here because you are refusing to pretend anymore. You just don't realize that where you are right now is supposed to be the one safe place from the meritocracy. I want you to know that you feel like I can't tell you what I actually believe. I can't tell you what's actually going on because it will cost me belonging and the respect and the inclusion and everything that comes with it. I want you to know this system births this attitude, this misery. I guarantee you, if you're listening, this person came to church with a smile on their face today. This is what this system births. Hundreds of women this last week got together and changed their first name in India. Their name was Nakusa, which in that region means unwanted. For every 1,000 boys, there's less than 900 women because they abort young girls at a higher rate and kill young girls even post-delivery at a higher rate than boys for all kinds of reasons that you would be able to guess. And they want so bad for a boy that when the girl, when it turns out that a girl is born, the grandfather in the room will go, Nakusa. And it means unwanted. So they're changing their names to beautiful and to powerful and all those things. And we applaud that. How in the world could a portion of society get so bad? Our grandfather, our father would roll his eyes at your birth and say, Nakusa. And you know why you're scandalized by that story. It's because we know inside of us, no. Family is supposed to be different than a playground, isn't it? And so I want to suggest looking at this whole thing backward. Because thinking about it backward means actually looking at the way things really are, the way that God made them. What happens the second somebody is born ideally? You're supposed to belong. Now, there's all kinds of reasons in a broken world and a very complex world where sometimes that doesn't happen. But ideally, when you're born, the default is belonging. It's the first thing that's true. Well, now, wait a minute. The kid hasn't even gotten an A yet. He hasn't even cooked. He can't even make his own lunch yet. Right. No, none of that comes into play. The very first thing that's true, and according to ideally the natural order of things, is before you do a thing right or wrong, before you speak a word, before you knock anything over, you belong. That's the design. So many of us don't realize how miserable the first way that we just went through this, starting with belief and then behavior and then belonging. We don't realize we're miserable because it runs across the design that God made everything to work by. Belonging is first. And so I want to suggest to us flipping this whole thing over and embracing all the hard work that comes with it. Because belonging as a default kills tribalism. And many of you, if you're honest with yourself, you say, don't kill tribalism. I just mastered it. I mastered it in college. I finally had it. I finally figured out how to survive. It kills it, evens the playing field, and absolutely overthrows the meritocracy. That no matter what you do, you're family. And this doesn't push on. If you don't want it, we don't push it on you. But when you're done doing what you're doing, we will be here for you. There's nothing you can do to get us off your team. Now, there may be some consequences that naturally occur from what you're doing, but it won't be revenge. There's nothing you can do to get us off your team. And one of our favorite buzzwords is, well, what about boundaries? Didn't read the book, but I read the cover. What about boundaries? Aren't you supposed to have boundaries? Yes, but those boundaries serve not the purpose of protecting just you, but of making sure that wisdom and love are employed without somebody's broken, dark toxicity raining all over you. When a blind person steps on your foot, you don't take revenge. It's all the same pain as a seeing person, but somehow when they're blind, same pain, you don't get mad. You immediately go, oh, it's because they're blind. I'll tell you what a boundary is. Pull your foot back. And then find out how to love this person according to where they are. See, starting with belonging is hard. But that's the default. You always come back to family. If you start with beliefs, you always come back to, are you right? You start with family. You start the way that things are supposed to exist. So then you go to behaviors. Now, your behaviors, your actions, you're saying, this is just simply what we do. Or, I don't quite get it yet, and so it's what I do because I think I'm becoming something. I'm not doing them so that I don't get voted off the island. I do these things because this is what our family did, just like a kid. Why do you do that? I don't know. It's just kind of what our family does. Your behaviors are rooted not in, I've got to perform a certain way or I get kicked out. Your behaviors are expressions of who you belong to, who you are, and who you are becoming. Not, well, if I don't do this, I lose my ability to refer to myself as part of the we. I also don't do things as well. I have behaviors that I've removed, but not so that I don't get found out as naughty or bad. There are things I cease to do the more I come to understand that life is sacred. Why would I abuse or consume you? Why would I mistreat you or even myself? I and you, we're all part of this cosmically beautiful thing called family. That's why I don't do not to check a box, but because it's what I'm becoming, something sacred. And in these behaviors, we begin to understand that ritual and ceremony, study, they're expressions of reality, not the point of reality. We're not creating reality. It's expressions of reality as we understand it. And it's all rooted in love, see, because it's all rooted in belonging versus being rooted in, I got to make sure I'm not seen as a subpar Christian. That will cost me inclusion. And so on top of this, something very interesting happens. Now we're talking about our beliefs. We've already outlined beliefs. Our belonging and our behaviors from that belonging, for most purposes, those are our beliefs. Now you have people who are stuck in the playground mentality. We do it in our offices. We do it in our families. We do all kinds of religion does it. This is something unique. Other people look at and say, wow, they're different. Look how they love each other. You realize the early Christians, this is how they talked about early Christians, not, man, they know their stuff. They said, look how they love each other. They'll fast for 3 days to take care of a person that hasn't worked in days, but just needs help. They share everything but their spouses. These people are nuts. I want to be part of it. That's their belief system. I don't know what's in their heads, but look at the way, capital W, the way that they live. It's so different. I want to be part of it. So then we come back to doctrine. We come back to creeds and our confessions and all that. All of that's so important. But that's just now how family discusses the mystery, the great unknowing. That's faith. Doctrine is just how we structure and orient a discussion that family has. It is no longer a test that if you fail, you're kicked out. No, it's just how we try to fathom the unfathomable. Do we always agree? No. It's now safe to disagree. See how beautiful that is? Oh, I don't have to agree? No. We just keep talking. We have wise, informed discussions about really what's going to come down to mystery in a lot of respects anyway. We take it very seriously, but it's no grounds for excommunication anymore. So now it's safe to actually think and talk. See how difficult this is? How long-term this process is? I mean, think about the quick results you got in the Inquisition. I'm going to kill you if you don't confess this. Done. Good. There's one. Who's next? In this process, you allow somebody to actually live it, to live through it. And you say, there's nothing you can do to get me off your team. It's a beautifully difficult long-term process. But see, for many of us, we've learned, and I say this all with respect, and I have to kind of skip across these issues, which can communicate a disrespect. It's not intended to be. So many of us, in the name of purity, in the name of being moral, in the name of holiness, we stand strong and say, not them. Here's my Bible verse. Here's what our church always did. Here's my philosophy. And not them. Vote this way, not this way. Accept these people, not those people. These people are close if they'll just say or stop saying this. In the name of holiness, we dice up humanity into little segments that we essentially are calling us and them. But we do it in the name of holiness, and we don't even recognize it for what it really is if we would just take some of the religion out of it. It's gross, and it's childish. Richard Rohr was right when he said, if you want to hate somebody, if you want to be vicious or vengeful or cruel or vindictive, I can tell you a way to do it without an ounce of guilt. Do it for religious reasons. Do it thinking you're obeying a law, thinking you're following some commandment or some verse from the Bible. It works quite well. See, we feel like we're rooted in an unswerving absolute. I used to behave that way because I used to believe that, and now I don't. So I know where I stand, and it's not with you. Get your act together, or you can't stand where I stand. It feels like it's endorsed by heaven. It feels like strength. It feels like power. But I want you to understand that Jesus, who when he comes back will be exactly the same. He's not like full strength mean Jesus when he comes back, because he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. Jesus doesn't go around going bad, evil, gross. Jesus says blind, which implies the natural state would be seeing. If you could just see the way I see things, you wouldn't settle for this kind of behavior. Jesus says lost, which implies value. Not trash, lost. Somebody's looking for you because you have value. Jesus says sick. You need a physician. The sick, they need a physician. It implies your default state is health. We've got to get this temporary thing out of you so that you can be the whole person I designed you to be. He doesn't go around pointing fingers and getting upset. The only time he talks about evil is when he's talking about religious systems that start with believing and behaving without lifting a finger to help people like you do when it's family. Real power. Real power is something very different. And so I want to challenge you. Don't ever for a second believe that when you join a group that speaks against another thought, another behavior, another lifestyle, another religion, another worldview, whatever, don't ever think that when you stand against, when you speak against without any relational context, when you denounce, when you hate in any form of hate and you say, no, it would be unloving not to share the truth, even though you don't know. Don't ever think that when you're doing that, that's strength. It feels like strength. I know it feels like strength. I made a living off of it for a while. Don't ever confuse that with strength. It's weakness. When you cast someone off, if they run, it's you moving. Because it's you confessing, I can't deal with you. I can't help but get upset and upset myself. I can't help but be grossed out. I can't help but let my fear of the unknown overwhelm me. When you cast off and excommunicate and divide, it's you being weak, though it feels strong. Strength is being a perfect son of God, having dinner with a prostitute and a tax collector and public enemy number one, and doing it with a smile. Because you're saying, well, there's nothing you can do to get me off your team. What you need to know is that you're loved. The Bible spends so much time talking about being in right relationship with each other. And we've taken the book and said, it's a book of rules to get right. Or you don't get to have a relationship with us. Don't ever think that that's coming from a place of strength. It comes with respect from the playground. The power that resurrected a dead Messiah, the corpse of Jesus, and brought it to life. Don't you know that's in you? Do you really think it takes strength to shun, to be grossed out, to gossip and to divide and say, I would like to me too, but you don't believe and behave properly? Do we really think that's an inspired position? No, it's weak. The spirit of a resurrected Christ, the same spirit, is in you. It's in us. I want to challenge you this morning not to do something that at first sounds weak. Oh, great. It's the kumbaya. We're all holding hands, everybody. No, it takes extraordinary strength that goes far beyond your willpower. That's why the Spirit lives in our midst. But it's already true. You just have to choose to live differently. You just have to choose to enter into the difficulty with how this plays out with your spouse, if you have one. With your parents, with your kids, coworkers, classmates, all of these people to say, I live differently now. This is going to be really hard. There's nothing you can do to get me off your team. Because I'm not on the playground anymore. This is not a club with a cross on it. I have power that resurrected the corpse of Messiah in me. I will not go backward and be tribal again. We're going to sit in this song for just a second. And when you hear it, it's going to most obviously be a prayer, an acknowledgement to God. But as you're listening to the words, hang on to that value. But at the same time, imagine being able to say it to another human being. And I have one more thought. You may already disagree with where I've taken us this morning. And what I want you to know is that's okay. Because to force you to believe it would be a belief system that says it's not about a belief system first. So if you disagree, it's great. You're still family.